fans, nice to have you back with us on this Saturday night. And, you know, I put out on Twitter at Baseball Marty and on Facebook when we have our guests and let everybody know who's coming on. And I think in all the years we've done it, I don't think we've gotten as many responses. And don't miss this interview with this gentleman, Kurt Aguilar, than any other that I've put out there. So Kurt Aguilar joins us. Who is he? He is a copy editor, an iconic copy editor, a sports copy editor, as well as a front page copy editor for the San Jose Mercury News and for the San Francisco Chronicle, going back to August of 94 until his retirement in 2018. But he has worked with the iconic sports writers of the Bay Area, as well as having a very big part, which we're going to talk about in the book 24 Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid, the book that came out with Willie Mays and John Shea. So with that introduction, we're going to find out more about him. But Kurt Aguilar, it's nice to have you with us.
Yeah, it's great to be on, Marty. I hope I can live up to that build up you gave me.
Boy, you got a lot of friends, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's amazing what a few dollars will do.
Okay, all right. Hey, let's go back to the beginning with you and getting into the business of journalism. And just exactly what does the copy editor do? And you've done it for the sports as well as the front page of the Chronicle. Give us a little bit of your background, how you got into this.
I was born and raised in Modesto, and I always liked media. And when I was in college, I wrote for the college newspaper, and we didn't have a journalism program per se. It was a little college in Turlock in the San Joaquin Valley, Cal State Stanislaus. And I tried to sign up for the one journalism class they had, which was news writing, and I accidentally wrote the wrong numbers in on my request and ended up with an internship for which I was not qualified, but the advisor insisted that she could get me an internship at a local paper.
Huh.
So I got that and then worked it for the last semester of my college career and didn't have any idea what was going to happen. And that newspaper was happy enough with the job I did as an unpaid intern that they called me that summer and offered me a job as a sports writer. So I was part of the two-man sports team there, worked there for a while, and then moved around to El Paso, Texas, where I became a copy editor, and then San Jose, and finally San Francisco. Copy editors are the last person to read the articles. It's the job is to make sure the grammar is correct, syntax is correct, and whatever fact-checking you can do under deadline. And I did copy editing for a large number of papers, from a small weekly in Central America up to the Mercury News and the Chronicle in their heydays. And by far and away, the hardest job is copy editing on a sports desk, because it's really a high wire act without a net. These reporters are so awesome. They're writing articles on incredibly tight deadlines, and the copy editors have to get them through and onto the page in time to print it up and get it on the trucks to be delivered at home. And it can be a stressful job, but a lot of fun.
Boy, amazing. Boy, great story. Kurt Aguilar is with us. Now, you've been a Giants fan your whole life, though, because we're going to talk some Giants baseball with you. But you've always been a Giants fan.
I have. I was 4 years old when the Giants moved west, and my brother and father informed me that the Giants were moving to our part of the world. We were Giants fans, and they had this guy named Mays who was really quite something. And you know, they weren't always correct, but they were pretty spot on that assessment. So I've been a Giants fan and Willie Mays fan since as long as I can remember.
Well, I'm interested in seeing baseball in Central America. You said you worked down there for a bit. What was life like? When did you go down there? What was life like in the baseball world in Central America?
Yeah, I was in San Jose, Costa Rica for 2.5 years from 91 to 94. And we traveled around South America a little bit, and we saw a game in Masaya, Nicaragua, which is this small town. Well, it's a large, one of the larger towns in Nicaragua, but probably only 30, 40,000 people. And there was just nothing going on in the town all day. We knew there was a ball game that night, so we tried to find things to do, and there was one restaurant open, and there was a dusty little central market where I got my pocket picked. And then there was a game that night, and we were like, well, what's going to happen to this game? There's nothing going on in this town. And we went to the game, and the place was just rocking. It was Roberto Clemente Memorial Stadium in Masaya, and it probably about the size of a single-A park, maybe held a couple thousand people. We had seen maybe a half dozen people and a couple of dogs on the street that day. And we, the ballpark just filled up to the teeth. The grandstand was completely full, and the outfield chain link fence was lined by people watching. And it was a wild scene. Instead of selling beer, they were selling three types of Flor de Caña rum from tubs up in the top of the bleachers, dark, medium dark, and light rum. And so needless to say, it got a little bit raucous. The fun part for us was that the road team was wearing blue and gray, and the home team was wearing orange and black. So we had no problem deciding which of the two teams to root for.
Very good. Kurt Aguilar is with us. Good, great to hear some of these stories. Kurt, this is the anniversary weekend of Willie Mays getting his 3,000th hit. And we're going to talk about the wonderful book that that John and Willie put together and that you edited. And John told me not a word went to the publisher until it was past you. But this is the weekend of the 3,000th hit against the Expos, Mike Wegner. And Willie, I think, became the 10th player in history to get 3,000 hits. Does that ring a bell for you?
Well, I would just, you had mentioned that earlier when I talked to you, and I'm just amazed that that was 50 years ago. And, of course, I remember him getting his 3,000th hit, and that was really Willie's last elite season. I think he hit around almost 300, not quite, had a good home run number, and that was the year he made that catch that everyone has seen a million times in right center at Candlestick, where he and Bobby Bonds are converging on this fly in the gap, and it looks like Bonds is going to get it, and then out of nowhere Mays comes leaping up against the 375 sign on that old chain link fence at Candlestick and pulls it down, and I think he knocked himself out, making a catch running into Bonds. And then another thing he did that year, I was, and this is one of the many fabulous stories in the book. He scored from first base on a play on a bunt by Willie McCovey. So Mays scored from first base on a bunt, and that was when they would do the shift against McCovey, one of the few people they did it against back that era. McCovey laid one down the third baseline, and it rolled into left field, and Mays just kept running. So at age 39, he scored from first on a bunt. So that kind of explains the genius of Willie Mays, I think.
Boy, that's a great, great story. And, yeah, but we celebrate, 50 years ago. I didn't put the number together until you just said it, 50 years ago, getting his 3,000th hit. My goodness, it doesn't sound that long ago, but 50 years. Kurt Aguilar is with us, as I say, an iconic copy editor. Let's talk a little bit of the job, because you get to the Mercury News, August of 94. You stay there till December of 05, but you work with some great sports writers from the Bay Area and people that I know and admire, and you're the last link here before they get to the paper. And let's talk about a few of them. Bud Geraci, how about him?
Bud was great. He was actually, I was in on a set of partial season tickets with Bud for a few years. Bud did steer me wrong one time, though. He was assistant sports editor in 2002 when the Giants went to the World Series, and they were up 3-2, and I was just, wetting my pants with excitement that they might win the World Series, but didn't know. And I was talking to Bud one time after game 5, and he was like, "Yeah, you know, Kurt, I think your guys are going to be okay." But we did too until that 7th inning, I guess. But
how did he take editing? And we're going to talk about Pedro Gomez, who of course we see on ESPN all the time, and I remember Pedro when I first started, Mark Gonzalez as well. Let's talk about those two with Bud, and how did they take to editing?
Well, Bud was legendary for – he was a columnist most of the time, and he was legendary for walking around the office and fretting and saying, I got nothing, and then, deadline came, and he would have a typically eloquent Bud Geraci column. Pedro and Mark Gonzalez were just starting out, and I was editing in the Fremont Bureau. I was a news content editor. But Mark and Pedro were high school and general assignment sports reporters assigned to that bureau. So they would work half the time for the sports department and half the time for the bureau getting us local sports. And they were very, obviously underutilized in that assignment, but dutifully did the jobs. And both of them were just dreams to work with. Pedro, I remember, always amused by life. I sent him out one time to some surfing contest. I forget what it was. Nothing important, but something to fill the pages. And he trudged out there and came back with the biggest smile on his face. And he said, I just got the greatest quote. This surfer had this good run on a wave. And I asked him how he felt. And he said, "I'm stoked, man. I'm so stoked. I haven't been this stoked since the last time I was this stoked." So Pedro would find a good time just about anywhere, and Gonzalez too. They were just dreams to work with, easy to edit, always accommodating.
Yeah, you had Dan Brown there too. Of course, we'll get to Susan Slusser, the combination of the husband-wife team, but Dan Brown was there as well.
Yeah, Brownie was there. I was in news most of the time when Dan was writing. I got the pleasure of reading his stuff. Every day, once in a while, if it would go to A1, we would do an edit on stories out of the sports department. But boy, that guy knows how to write, and that's quite a household of journalism. Brown and Susan.
Kurt Aguilar with us, as I say, one of the iconic copy editors, and when it was announced that he was on the show, boy, the journalism world shook a little bit there. They couldn't wait to hear you. But what are some of the things, and I know you talk about the High Wire Act, and really I'm amazed at the sports writers, the baseball writers that can sit down and knock out a game story right at the deadline. What are some of the things that you would have to edit for even people like Pedro or Mark Gonzalez or Bud Geraci, if he did a game story or something like that? We'll get to the Chronicle people in a second. But what are some of the things you had to look for when you edited?
Generally in sports, we were lucky in that if they were doing a major sport, it would be on TV, and we'd either have a TV in the room or at the Chronicle. We had them at our desk. So the reporters are trying to get all these details correct, and the person assigned to copy editing, like say it was a Giants game that night, would make sure to either watch the game or if it wasn't on TV, try to watch a like CBS Sportsline or ESPN to watch the game cast. And then we'd try to match up our knowledge of what was going on in the game with what came from the reporter, because they're, you know, especially now, they're tweeting and trying to write the story at the same time and writing it to beat everyone and get it online right away. So naturally, they're not going to get everything 100% correct. So we were there just to serve as a backstop. Even with sports, you know, the news, obviously, it's life and death to get it right, especially in this political atmosphere. Sports, you want to get it as right as possible. You have your credibility at stake. So the copy editors are trying to serve as a backstop to the writers and you know, make sure that the grammar is right and the syntax is correct and the tone is correct. And in sports, that's all done in 20 minutes at times on late breaking game stories.
Wow.
And they have to write headlines on top of that.
Yeah, really. I'm glad that you could be on to explain this part of it, because we just get the finished product. But it does take it takes a team to make it happen. Kurt Aguilar is with us. Kurt, let's take a break. We're going to come back. I want to hear a little bit about some of the writers you worked with at the Chronicle along these same lines of what we just talked about at the Merck, and also how you got involved with the 24 book with John Shea, that you did a great job of editing that book before it went to the publisher. So, and the thrill of maybe meeting Willie if you got a chance to do that. So, Kurt, stay with us for a second. We'll come back with more right after this. All right, back with Kurt Aguilar, as I say, one of the iconic sports editors, Metro Side editor as well, a senior news editor for the Chronicle for 14 years and 7 months, and did a great job talking about the job itself. And I think of Scott Osler, Henry Shulman, Bruce Jenkins, my goodness, Susan Slusser. How do you edit people like that?
Well, like I said about the people at the Merck, they're writing copy under the gun, and they're human, and sometimes things might get a little conflated in whether something happened in the third inning or the second inning or two out, one out. So it's with real great detail that we have to keep an eye out to make sure that we get it as correct as possible. And they were all, it just seems like the better the writer is, the more accommodating they are to editing. That's generally been my feeling. They want to get it right, and they don't have a problem with someone pointing out that, you know, we need to change X for whatever reason. Of course, if you try to do stupid stuff, then, you know, you might burn a bridge or two. But I tried not to be stupid.
Well, you did a great job. How about Scott Osler, though? One of the funniest guys, one of the cleverest writers that I've ever read, ever, anywhere. And I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, with the great writers of New York City in the 50s. But what if you had to correct Scott Osler? What would he say?
Scott he's such a nice guy. I mean, his copy, he sounds like such a smart aleck, which is the beauty of Osler. And you deal with him, and he's just a dream to deal with. He would often write on deadline, and, you know, it's the end of the day. If it's a night game, you know, these guys and women have been out of the park maybe 10, 11 hours. They're worn out. They've tweeted all night. They finally write their story, and they're trying to relax. And the last thing they want is a call from the copy desk saying there's a problem with their story. Okay. And I would try to soften the blow a little by apologizing for bothering them, and, you know, hey, Scott, sorry to bug you, but. And I would never get to the but, because I'd say, hey, Scott, sorry to bother you. And he'd immediately interject, you don't need to apologize for calling me. you're trying to make my copy better. I really appreciate it.
Wow.
That's what it's like to work with Scott Osler. Just he's a dream. Jinx, Susan, Henry, they all feel the same way. I think they treat us, or they treated me well whenever I had to bother them. They found it as no bother because they were intent on getting their stories as proper as possible.
Oh, beautiful. Now, John Shea, let's get to the Willie Mays book a little bit, but obviously you've worked with John in that capacity before working with him on the book on 24.
Yeah, that was John, I wrote so many articles that had Willie Mays references in them, and rightfully so, because he's Willie Mays. And any time that there's some kind of positive record set by a giant or something done by a giant, you would bet that Willie Mays had done it before. But it got to the point where I would start bugging him if he wrote an article that didn't have a Willie Mays reference to it. Whether, you know, it could be if he was, you know, sitting in on the Warriors, and I'd call him and say, John, there's no Willie reference in this story. And so I guess I was enough of a pain in the neck about that he figured I'd know enough about Willie Mays that in early 2018 he approached me and asked if I would be willing to work with him to help edit this book that he was going to be doing. I thought it over for about a half second and said, you know, I'd love to do it. I don't need you to pay me anything, but I'll only do it if you introduce me to Willie Mays.
Oh, boy.
So that was my heavy duty negotiating on getting the editing gig for this book.
Well, John tells me that you came up with the title, 24 Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid.
Yeah, I was meeting with John and his agent, Kimberly Cameron. We were having a lunch barnstorming session for John to send in the proposal to publishing houses. And he had a title in mind that Kimberly didn't like. I can't remember what it was, but she didn't think much of it. And so we were at this lunch trying to figure out what the name would be. And we were brainstorming, and I just thought, well, everybody knows that he's number 24. Why don't we do that? And the agent, when I asked if she knew what his number was, did. And I thought, well, you know, I think probably everybody does. Why don't we use that? And we were talking about having it be life lessons. And so we just brainstormed that subtitle. And 24 was a low enough number that we could actually do 24 life lessons under the number of, Willie Mays' jersey number. Wow. I think John thought that 24 might be a few too many life lessons to write, but he managed to pull them all together.
Well, they're fabulous, fabulous. I love the book. It's one of the best baseball books ever. And, boy, you had a very big part in it and the title as well. Now, you also, there is an audio book that I'm familiar with. Bob Costas is involved with that, and you also were part of that.
Yeah, I was the director of the audio book. John was sending me recordings of voice actors who were trying out for there were two jobs for voice actors, one the voice of Willie Mays and one of the narrator. And we were hearing that they were not able to get all the names right. They would mispronounce names like DeRocher and couldn't figure out Harvey Keene's name and names that are second nature to people who followed baseball in that era, but people who didn't, they were kind of stumbling blocks. And So John proposed to the publishing house that I put together a guide for the name pronunciation, and they said, well, maybe he should be the director.
Huh.
And the director, and I hadn't done any audio since college, but the director will sit in on the recording and just interject if the names are pronounced incorrectly or the tone is wrong, that kind of stuff.
Bob Costas is the guy. Did you have to correct him?
I did, and that was like sort of like trying to correct God. he wrote this beautiful foreword to the book, and they got him to read his own foreword. So here I am. I haven't done audio in 50 years. Bob Costas is on the line from the studio in New York, going to read his foreword. And mind you, this was right after the Kobe Bryant crash. So Costas was everywhere on radio and TV trying to help people make sense of what had just happened and Kobe's position in American sports history. And so this was Costas at his most prominent. And so he goes in and starts to read the foreword. And the foreword starts with him just saying 660 home runs, talking about Willie's number of home runs. He reads it and says 666 home runs.
Oh, no.
And then, but he gives himself a mulligan and says, oh, I'll start over. And I feel relieved thinking, okay, he caught himself. He'll fix it next time. And he starts over, 666 home runs. And I just sort of have to pipe in and bite the bullet and say, yeah, Mr. Costas, sir, it was 660 home runs. And he said, what? He said, you said 666. It was 660. And he said, I said 666. Well, then I'm an idiot. Let's try that again. And then he absolutely nailed it from then on out. And it just beautiful voice to have on that foreword on the audiobook. And
well,
another aspect of the audiobook. Another aspect of the audiobook is that there's an interview, a taped interview, a conversation between John and Willie that was made exclusively for that audiobook that obviously you wouldn't get in the print book, but a chance for people to hear how Willie sounds today, and he sounds pretty darn sharp, let me tell you.
Well, I was there for that. They used my microphone, and as John, in the middle of the interview with Willie, says, because I know Willie, and Willie and I have done shows together, and he says to Willie, he says to me, well, do you want to ask any questions? And I said, nope, absolutely not. And Willie goes, yeah, ask questions. You always ask questions. So it's not part of the interview, but I was there for that. But, boy, I'm so glad to have you on, Kurt. It's a great story.
My pleasure.
What do you do now in retirement, now that you're retired? What do you do?
Well, I, like everyone else, I'm not doing a whole lot of anything, but I am working part time as a copy chief for a little journalism nonprofit here in the city called the San Francisco Public Press. It's a very issue oriented project that addresses homelessness and social inequities, that kind of stuff. So that keeps me busy, and that's my main avenue of work right now.
Well, you had great career in the Bay Area. You guided a lot of wonderful, wonderful journalists, and I'm very happy to have you on the show. Really, and it's a career that spans so many decades. and maybe culminating.
You know, it's fun.
Yeah, with the book. With the book. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's funny that it's almost like everything kind of led up to this book. Being a huge Giants fan, huge Willie Mays fan, and then a journalist on top of that. It's a great project. By far the project that I've worked on that I've liked the most. That's for sure.
What a beautiful story. Well, thank you for coming on the show and sharing this story with everybody. We'll do it again. As more milestones of Willie's get noticed, we'll bring you on. But you guided some very important journalists over some very tough territory of deadlines and things like that, as you said, flying without a net. And you did a great job. So thank you for coming on, and we'll keep in touch, Kurt. Thank you.
Okay, Marty. Thanks a million for having me.
Oh, very good. That is Kurt Aguilar. More coming up. Boy, interesting story, wasn't it? More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.